Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headlined the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Donald Trump calls a major ruling in his favor today amazing. Well, that's one way to describe it. The lead starts right now. It's the plot twist no one saw coming. Donald Trump given 10 more days to pay his bond, and the amount he owes cut down bigly. The new timeline in his civil fraud case, plus the other ruling today, not necessarily in Trump's favor, involving alleged hush money payments to adult film star Stormy Daniels, plus a high-stakes trip to D.C. canceled the protest move by Israel's prime minister, upset over the actions of the U.S. and a vote demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. And troubled skies, a door plug flying off, questions about quality. Now the head of Boeing says he's leaving. Will his departure settle safety concerns as you get ready to book summer travel? Welcome to The Lead. I'm Phil Mattingly in for Jake Tapper. And we start with the Law and Justice Lead and former President Donald Trump's babies. Well, they're safe for now. And by babies, we mean, of course, his New York properties. And that's his word. I want to make that very clear, because that's exactly how Trump referred to them in a Truth Social post. Those properties, well, they were potentially set to be seized as early as today, as he faced a deadline to post a massive $464 million bond in his New York civil fraud case. Trump's team was scrambling because he could not make that payment. But in the 11th hour, an appeals court handed him a major lifeline. Now, to secure the bond, Trump only has to pay $175 million, and he has an extra 10 days to do it. So will he make that payment? And does it mean he's off the hook for the other $289 million of that judgment against him? We're going to explain all of that just ahead. But while Trump is claiming a victory here, well, he can't win them all. Today, Trump also learning his New York criminal hush money trial will begin on April 15th, sooner than he'd hoped.
I know that you're going to have the trial. I don't know how you can have a trial like this in the middle of an election, a presidential election. And this is, again, this is a Biden trial. These are all Biden trials.
Now, to be clear, they are not all Biden trials. Trump again claiming without any evidence that President Biden is behind the cases against him. Now, the hush money trial could end up being the first and potentially only criminal trial Trump faces before the presidential election in November. And 10 days after that trial is set to begin, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments on his immunity appeal in the federal election subversion case. All of this in the backdrop of his 2024 presidential election campaign. We know it's a lot to keep up with. We're going to try and break it all down for you. We start off with CNN's Tom Foreman. Tom, the bond now set at $175 million. It's a lot lower than $464 million, but this doesn't mean Trump is really off the hook here, does it?
No, not at all. What the court did today was give Trump a little more time and space to try to stave off that almost $500 million judgment, pushing the deadline for him to post bond another 10 days down the line and lowering the amount by almost two-thirds. Also, allowing Trump and his sons to keep running their New York businesses under the eye of an independent monitor. But while the courts gave Trump's lawyers until September to fully flesh out the terms of their appeal, if they don't do that or they don't meet this new deadline with the lower bond, the attorney general could be right back on the doorstep of taking Trump's property while his appeal of the overall judgment is pending.
So it turns out the more we look at it, the process is certainly more complicated than perhaps it would initially appear. Why is that?
Yeah, well, more than two-thirds of Donald Trump's wealth is tied up in his property, according to an analysis by Forbes. Mar-a-Lago down in Florida, properties in New York, Chicago, Las Vegas, and so on. He has even more of that, most of his money locked up in golf courses and resorts. There could be fresh legal challenges to each and every seizure out there. Not saying successful, but slow things down. And selling each seized property could be a whole new headache. Analysts say that buyers could be wary of becoming entangled in Trump's legal battles. They may fear negative associations, protests from his friends or his foes if they buy his property. And lastly, real estate agents point out these are largely old properties with unknown value. Trump says they're worth a fortune, but his false claims are the cornerstone of this whole case. Until independent inspectors have a comprehensive look, the true worth of this property is a mystery. Phil?
Yeah. Other than that, very clean and simple process. Tom Foreman breaking it down so well, as always. Thank you. CNN's Laura Coates, Jimmy Gangel, and Ellie Honig join me now. Guys, there is so much to get to here because this was a really consequential day on two huge legal issues the former president is dealing with. Laura, I want to start with you. The bond payment. Yeah. You look at the top line numbers, you say $175 million. That's a lot less than $460 plus million. It's still a lot of money.
It's
Does
a
Trump
lot
have
of
it?
He says he's got money now. The question, of course, is whether he'll actually be able to have it in 10 days or not.
Are you saying there's some skepticism about what the president
says? I'm just saying, if you got $175 million on hand, I have questions about my own investments. That's all I'm telling you right now. But assuming he does have the money, remember what the appellate bond is for. On the one hand, it's to ensure that the person who owes the money does not hand it over to the person asking for the money without the appeal going forward, because then they can't actually get it back if they are successful. On the other hand, they want to know that you actually do have the money you can pony up if you do not prevail at the appellate process. And so this is part of a twofold thing. It sounds unfair to a lot of people to think I got to hand you over money to appeal my case, but that's really what it's about. And so him ponying up in this way is huge. I would not read too much into the lower amount as suggesting the court is saying that Engeroran got it wrong in the first instance. Because you have those two primary concerns, that's probably why it was lowered.
So that's a fascinating point, because you've seen, I think, at least the implication from Trump's lawyers that perhaps this is a sign that the broader judgment may not hold or that appeal may not work. The reduction that we saw today, we saw Donald Trump in the break during his other legal issue he was dealing with today come out, make very clear they're very happy with it. They were pleased with it. I don't think they necessarily expected it to some degree. How big of a win is this really?
Look, I will stipulate for our two lawyers here, as you said, $175 million is a whole lot better than having to come up with $464 million. And to quote Donald Trump today, he said, I have a lot of cash. That said, I would like to underscore what the counselor over here said. You know, how much cash does he have? We know that he had to put up a lot of cash, the Schwab account for the E. Jean Carroll case, which was $100 million for that bond. There's one other thing we know about Donald Trump. He likes to fight and he likes to delay. So even though he may have this much more money, I would not be surprised if 10 days from now we saw some other kind of delay, and then Letitia James will have to go forward and see how she extracts the money.
It would certainly be on brand based on everything that we've done. But Ellie, to this point, and we're talking about this earlier today, this is different because he doesn't really have a choice. He may think he has a choice. He may fight for having that choice. Yeah. But what happens if 10 days from now he says, well, I want to have a negotiation on this, or I want to delay it a little bit more?
Right.
Then what?
So whether Donald Trump posts a bond or not has nothing to do with his appeal rights. He can appeal either way. But if he posts a bond, Letitia James cannot start collecting on this until after the appeal is done. We're talking a year or more until all his appeals are done. If he does post the bond, then she's foreclosed until appeal is over. But if he fails to post the bond, she can start collecting 10 days from now. Really important point that Tom made. The amount that was reduced today is not the final amount that he owes. He still owes $454 million. He only has to post now $175 million on bond. So he's getting a temporary break, but it doesn't undermine the final judgment that's against him. Now, the appeals court ultimately may say that number has to come down, but that's yet to be determined.
Yeah, that's a really important point. I'm glad you reiterated that point. Jamie, the former president went to one of his properties today. I don't think it was subtle that it was one of the properties that Letitia James, the attorney general, had pointed out up to that point, held a press conference. And as part of the press conference, he said this. Take a listen.
Are you going to start putting money into your campaign?
Yeah.
You haven't done that since 2016.
Well, first of all, it's none of your business, I mean, frankly. But I might do that. I have the option. But if I have to spend $500 million on a bond, I wouldn't have that option. I'd have to start selling things. I don't have to sell anything because it's a phenomenal company. Look, I built a phenomenal company.
I'm not pausing for effect. I'm pausing to digest on some level. But it's look, let's be honest. He didn't use any of his own money in 2020. Right. In 2016, he pledged $100 million plus. He spent $60 million total. People I've talked to in and around his kind of circle say there's no plans for him to spend any money on his campaign this time around. Is there any chance that he's going to finance his campaign, or part of it at least?
Donald Trump has long said he has all this money, and he also likes to use other people's money. But there's no question what we saw there. This case triggers Donald Trump like none of the other cases, because it's about his brand, his image, this notion that he is very, very successful. Michael Cohen, who we all know, said to me last year, and he says it from time to time, yeah, he doesn't like the criminal cases, but when you're talking about money and the brand, that's what you just saw there. That's when he gets sensitive and prickly.
Yeah, it's the convergence of the personal, the business, the politics as well, plus the legal. That was also a perfect segue, mentioning Michael Cohen, because there's another major legal issue that the president, former president, was dealing with today, Laura, and that is the hush money case. They have now, I think the judge rejected the effort to delay it even further. The trial is now has a start date. A former president, criminal trial, who also happens to be the presumptive Republican nominee, there's nothing we've ever seen like this before. What does it mean?
First of all, it's none of your business.
it's a good line.
That's a callback.
You so know. I was not going to let that go. We're all clear on that point, right?
Okay.
I
like,
no, it's not going to happen. Yeah. But having said that, I mean, this is a case, to your point, why is it so problematic? It's also about his sex life, frankly, if I'm being perfectly clear. It involves an allegation that he's had an extramarital affair with somebody he has expressed in the past is someone he seems to feel is less than him. And so you have that conundrum. You've got the idea this is, for many people, news that you've already heard back before he was initially the president of the United States. And he wants you to think of that in the rearview mirror. But in reality, a lot of what Alvin Bragg's case involves, more than three dozen counts, I should say, about the issues of falsifying records and beyond, are things that were not necessarily contemplated immediately in the Michael Cohen trial that could be more expansive in some ways. And so he would like you to look at this and say, this is all in the past. They're always trying to refer to the past. It's all Biden's fault here. But Biden is, number one, not involved in this at all. This is a state-level prosecution. No more than a mayor is beholden to the president, is a Manhattan DA beholden to the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland. But it all fits in the narrative that this is the system and everyone against him, picking on him and hoping somehow to embarrass him, to shame him, and to suggest that he cannot pay bills, or that he would be so bothered by the fact that he had this allegation that he would pay to avoid it. This is, remember, after the Access Hollywood tape was known to the general public, that he is going to have to suggest that he was somehow so sullied by this assertion of at least one extramarital affair that he went to great lengths to hide it to this degree. This is all part of the all political brand, but now his new brand is me against the man, even though he could be called the man. If you have $175 million in cash, that's the definition of the man.
There's also a level of irony here that, like, he's saying President Biden directed this, and he couldn't, the DA couldn't get documents from SDNY
right.
for a period of time for federal prosecutors, which complicated things that led to today. This was always the case of the four that people kind of put to the side,
yeah.
right? That this is the two Jack Smith trials were the ones that everybody's really focused on. Obviously, you have the Fulton County case, which is going into the election subversion issue, which is obviously of national, I think, import here. Explain to people why, if this matters.
This is a big darn deal any way you cut it. Let's just get to the bottom line here. This could be the only of the four criminal cases tried before the election. That is a huge deal. And as Laura said, the conduct here is going to bring back a lot of memories that Donald Trump doesn't want coming back. And while most of us are familiar, I think the public is generally familiar with the Stormy Daniels story, if he gets convicted, he will be a convicted felon. And that's a lot of baggage. And there could be voters, Jamie's the political expert, but I think just in common sense, everyday life, who say, look, you know, I'm not sure about the guy, but I'm not comfortable voting for a convicted felon. And by the way, this is happening now. Today was the last gasp to try to get this delayed. I know Trump said he's going to appeal. I don't think he appeals this, and if he does, the trial date. And if he does, he's going nowhere. This is going to happen. This is 20 days from now. We are going to have State of New York versus Donald J. Trump, a criminal trial. The consequences, is it the most serious of the four cases? No, it's probably the least serious of the four criminal cases, but it's still a big darn deal.
Yeah, and it's none of your business.
I'm going to use that.
Thank you all very much, as always. We appreciate it. Up next,
someone who is very slow to call out Donald Trump and his many election lies.
You're saying you're not sure, as the Republican Party chair, that he was the legitimately elected
president. I'm saying there were lots of problems with the 2020 election, and we need to fix it going forward.
Turns out there's receipts. Now that she's no longer with the RNC, hear how Ronna McDaniel explains why she never condemned Trump's repeated calls to pardon convicted January 6 rioters. Plus, the reported political attack planned by Team Biden as his challenger, RFK Jr., gets ready to beef up his presidential campaign. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in our politics lead. RFK Jr.'s presidential campaign is set for a pivotal moment. The independent candidate set to name his running mate tomorrow in Oakland, California. Media reported he's expected to tap Nicole Shanahan, a California-based attorney, an entrepreneur with very deep pockets. He's also floated NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers and former wrestler and Minnesota governor Jesse Ventura as potential VP choices. Now, Kennedy cites deadlines in at least 23 states that require him to name a vice presidential candidate in order to apply to get on their ballots for November. Let's bring in our political panel to discuss this and a lot more. Axios reporting, we've got some reporting as well, that Biden's campaign, quote, and the DNC have a dedicated team of staffers and consultants to try and diminish Kennedy. Paul, does this show that they're concerned? Are they on the ball? I look at poll after poll and I see the numbers and I'd say, probably about that time.
Absolutely. Third parties elected Donald Trump in 2016. About 6 to 7% of Americans voted third party. That third party vote dropped to less than 2, which is how Biden won. So anything over 2, Democrats are in trouble. Kennedy alone is getting 15 in some of these places. So yeah, my view is third parties, they're like cockroaches in the kitchen. Okay, it's not what they carry off that upsets you. It's what they fall into and foul up. Okay, Bobby Kennedy could fall into every swing state and foul it up for Joe Biden and throw the whole election to Donald Trump. So I'm very happy that the Democrats are on this because it's a very real threat.
And note to self, don't go to Paul Begala's
campaign. What is this definitely seeing? Numbers to some degree. Elena, the press secretary for the Kennedy campaign says, quote, Mr. Kennedy plans to take votes from both President Biden and former President Trump. So far, the Trump campaign hasn't really seemed to devote a lot. They've said some things, but haven't really devoted resources to attacking him. When you talk to Trump advisors, how do they look right now at his role in the map?
So it's interesting. RFK Jr. announced that he was switching and becoming an independent, and that's how he was going to run, I think there was more concern then. They definitely recognized that he was a potential threat, and as Paul just laid out so eloquently, a spoiler. Like, he could be a massive spoiler.
Like in the food as a cop.
Exactly. Spoiling the food, spoiling elections.
Right in the Captain Crunch right there, you know?
And it's especially important, and I think he could be especially effective given it's expected to be a close election, something that Donald Trump's team very much does expect this election to be. The other thing, though, that I will argue is I think there's been some reporting out there that they're not that concerned, that they think any kind of RFK spoiler would hurt Biden more than it would hurt Trump. I don't necessarily think that that's how his team sees this. When I talk to them, they recognize that he's kind of a wild card in some senses, and especially when it comes to the people who are really against the system. When I talk to Trump's team, people close to the former president, people like Steve Bannon say this, that they think that, you know, the people who are anti-vaccine, anti-establishment, have very strong positions on Ukraine, not wanting to give more money to Ukraine funding. Those are the type of people that do normally go for Donald Trump, but could potentially go for someone like RFK Jr. And that's where there is concern, because I don't think it's as simple as saying he's only going to take votes away from Biden.
Yeah, it's fascinating because it's not binary, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just look at him and say, well, he's going to do this or he's going to do that. Right. He kind of cuts across lines. Doug, I do have to ask, former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel debuted as a political analyst for NBC News. Hiring has upset some top network journalists on and off air. Here's what McDaniel said about Trump's plan to pardon convicted January 6th insurrectionists.
Agree with Trump saying he's going to free those who've been charged.
I do not think people who committed violent acts on January 6th should be freed.
So you disagree with that? He's been saying that for months. Ronna, why not speak out earlier? Why just speak out about that now?
When you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, right? Now I get to be a little bit more myself.
So, Doug, I don't think there's an exact analog to your time at the Republican National Committee. Like, you talking about a bus that said fire Pelosi on the side is slightly different than, like, free the people who attacked the U.S. Capitol.
Yeah.
But the take one for the team shtick, buy it?
No, I don't know what it means. I think it's one of those things that when you're planning to go on TV and you want to talk about something, you say, oh, that sounds good. And then in reality, sometimes it doesn't. This is an example. Your job as RNC chair is, one, to raise a lot of money. Two, it's to bring on staff in comms, digital, finance, and field. There's some questions about that now. So that you're helping your candidates do the best job possible to get them over the line. And the other part is to be objective. And this is one of the areas where she fell short in the past few months. The Rule 11 in the RNC is so specific that if anybody is running against Mike Johnson in a primary, let's say they get 7 votes in a primary, the RNC has to be objective on this and completely neutral unless the state party says Mike Johnson's our candidate, which they typically don't. So by urging Nikki Haley to get out, she wasn't doing her job.
The state of the RNC right now, Doug makes a great point, besides going into the bylaws of the RNC. Impressive, sir. There are questions about finances. There are questions about operations. There are questions about they had a bank your vote program, which was really critical, and Republicans all seem to acknowledge that, except for the one who's actually going to be the Republican nominee. Where are they right now, particularly given there's been a lot of turnover there in the last couple of weeks?
There has. I mean, the RNC is completely restructured, and it's restructured to become essentially an operation that operates one and the same with the campaign. A lot of the communications, the processes within the RNC are operating next to and within the Trump campaign. They are kind of having this symbiotic relationship. Now, as it comes to election fraud, all of that, there is a program that Ronna McDaniel set up when she was still chairwoman that Michael Whatley is going to continue, which is all about voter integrity. They brought in some other people like Christina Bobb, the former correspondent at One America News Network, Chris Skies, people like that to run this. And it's essentially previewing what we know Donald Trump is a huge priority for him, which is this idea that there could be fraud again in the 2024 election. Again, I say fraud again from their viewpoint. We know that Donald Trump obviously overstated all of the fraud that happened in the 2020 election, but that's really where a lot of the focus is. As for fundraising, of course, that's a huge issue that they have. I think a big thing that's going to help them is now that they can start using Donald Trump's name, his likeness, they'll be able to revive a lot of what they weren't able to do over the past several years when Donald Trump wasn't the candidate, he wasn't a nominee, they weren't able to use his name.
Well, from a party operations perspective, look, Joe Biden runs the DNC, Joe Biden's team runs the DNC, and they used it essentially as a shell election campaign before they morphed into the re-election campaign. Is this a problem for Republicans? If you're a Democrat, are you looking at the RNC right now and going, yes?
Here's how I look at both parties. Which party is raising more money? Right now, that's Joe Biden's Democrats. Yeah. Which party is more united? Definitely Joe Biden's Democrats. The Republican National Committee is in chaos right now. The House of Representatives on the Republicans is in chaos. So the party's more united. Which party's more mainstream? So when you have Mr. Trump going out to rallies and saying we should pardon these guys who tased Michael Fanone until his heart stopped, a cop, okay, I think that's a little outside the mainstream. So right now, I think the Republican Party is way, way off course, and they've got to find a way. They raised the money, and it seems now to be going into Mr. Trump's legal defense, not into electing Republicans, which is why we have a Republican Party. It's chaos, and to use a Nikki Haley phrase that I like.
Yeah,
chaos follows him everywhere he goes. You know why? Because he's chaos incarnate.
He's still tied with the current president.
Yes, he is. Polling.
We got a lot more to get to. You guys probably have things to do, but I'm not going to let you leave because I want to keep talking to you guys. Stay with me. Up next, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Georgia Republican, says, quote, Speaker Mike Johnson cannot remain as Speaker of the House. How's that going to work? We're going to talk about it next. We're back with more in the Politics Lead. It's spring break for Congress. They'd like you to call it district work period, but it's not a stress-free vacation for at least House Speaker Mike Johnson. His leadership job still under threat. Just yesterday, fellow Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene defended her move to potentially oust the Speaker over the bipartisan spending deal. Yes, if this sounds familiar, it is. Let's bring back the panel. Take a listen to what Marjorie Taylor Greene said yesterday on Fox.
I filed this motion to vacate, but I haven't called it to the issuing a pink slip and giving our conference and a notice saying that we have got to find a new speaker. This may take weeks. It may take months. It may not even happen until next Congress. But Speaker Johnson cannot remain a Speaker of the House.
Doug, she hedged a little bit on the timing there. She also didn't note that I don't think she's got the votes. Mm-hmm. She wanted to do it. Is this like a perpetual thing that Republicans will be dealing with in eternity in the House?
Sure. You know, there's a scene in the movie The Jerk where Steve Martin is a wait guesser at a carnival, which is very similar to what our Congress is right now. And he realizes this is a profit deal. This is a profit deal. This is about raising money, raising your profile. She said it on a very highly watched TV show. She's going on a lot of TV shows, raising more money with it. And what does Steve Martin say at the end of that scene? He says, step right up and win some crap. This is the part of the House Republican Conference right now that is controlling what the conference is able to do or not do. It's a small fraction, but it is a profit motive, and we're getting exactly what we deserve because of it.
To your point, though, Elena, is it a small fraction? Like, you watch people like Mike Gallagher, the Wisconsin Republican who announced that he's leaving in a couple of weeks, will bring Speaker Mike Johnson's majority down to one vote for a period of time, which sounds super fun. If you talk to Republicans of Republican, Doug High type Republicans, they're saying Mike Gallagher was future of this party. No question about it. Is it just a small group that's driving this, or is it bigger now?
It's a smaller group than it was when they were ousting McCarthy, that's for sure. I think Republicans, even the ones who were behind some of these pushes to oust, whether it be Johnson or other leaders in the past, recognize that it is hurting the party overall. The majority of people, Republicans, I should say, in Congress, recognize that this isn't something that is helping. And it is interesting to hear from the likes of people like Matt Gaetz, who is really, you know, one of the most firm people behind helping oust Kevin McCarthy, and some of the others who were part of that movement as well, say, we can't do that again. Because if we do, not only is it bad for Republicans, but who knows who we could get as a speaker. I think Matt Gaetz said, you know, we'll end up with a Democrat. And I think they recognize the chaos. But at the same time, so much of this is political. And right, to your point, Doug, it's political. They're getting media attention. And there's definitely a massive split within the Republican Party in Congress on how to function. That's why they're not functioning. That's why we can't see anything get done. And everyone says that always about Congress, but it's especially true now. And of course, it's not helped by the ever-growing narrow majority that they have.
And there's a political cost. When Republicans were in purgatory because they couldn't figure out who their speaker was going to be, it made it very hard to recruit candidates, and it sure made it harder for the Congressional Committee to raise money and have a winning message for you know, a sizable period of time.
Yeah, and it was going to be a tough election campaign no matter what for the NRCC because of the districts they had to defend. It's getting tougher because of retirements. You make an interesting point about Matt Gaetz saying, well, we might end up with a Democrat if we do this again. Honestly, I was out at a lunch when all of this transpired on Friday and came out of lunch.
You were never out to lunch.
No. I wasn't out. It was a working lunch. Thank you for the corporate card. And saw the headlines and texted Democratic staffer. I was like, I'm sorry, is Hakeem Jeffries like Speaker now? Like, is there a possibility that Hakeem Jeffries becomes Speaker?
There's a possibility. I mean, the Republicans are simply imploding. It's astonishing. They seem to be committed to chaos as a brand. I don't understand why they, as you point out, Mike Gallagher is as good a Republican congressman as there is. I mean, it's not my ideology, but he's a terrific person. He's done a great job running this China committee, brought all the Democrats on his committee along with him on his bill to crack down on TikTok and force a sale. So when you're driving people like that out of your party, something fundamentally is wrong. I will note, I first worked on the Hill, came here in 89. The leader was Bob Michael. He got cooed by Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich got cooed and replaced by Denny Hastert. Hastert was not cooed, but after him, John Boehner, he got cooed. Then Paul Ryan, he got cooed. Then Kevin McCarthy, he got cooed. Now Mike Johnson. I don't know what's in the water or something over there.
Here a coup, there a coup, everywhere a cuckoo when you come into House Republican conference meetings.
It's cuckoo?
For Cocoa Puffs, yes.
Did you just come off the top of your head? I feel like you may have used that one before. Well, can I ask, when you talk to Trump officials and they're watching what's happening with House Republicans, what do they say? Like, they've got to be a little bit concerned about the dysfunction, right?
They are, but honestly, they're so much more concerned with Donald Trump's campaign, all of these legal issues, what we've been talking about on air.
So they're not concerned with like a spillover from people watching in the House and saying, I don't want that.
I think they're trying to give Mike Johnson more time, honestly. I don't think that they're happy, obviously. When I talk to them, I think they recognize that Congress is a mess right now and that the Republican Party or the Republicans in Congress are a mess. But they also recognize that, I mean, Donald Trump was one of the people who endorsed Mike Johnson. He put his support behind him. He's going to stick with him, at least for now. I do think that when there is an issue that comes up, like what we saw with the border deal, when he tried to tank the border deal and how he talked about Kevin McCarthy around that bipartisan border deal in the fall, if there's an issue like that where Johnson really stands in the way of something Donald Trump deeply believes in, you'll see the tides turn. I don't think that that's a relationship that he's going to, you know, fight for all the way to the end. Yeah. But for now, he's kind of keeping his distance and not getting overly involved.
Every time we have a story about internal Republican problems, Republicans are unable to focus on all those things that Joe Biden is unpopular at, which is exactly where their focus should be.
It's going to be fascinating to watch play out. It's still a split polling across the board right now, mm-hmm. despite all of this. All right. Thanks for hanging around for an extra block.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys. Well, CNN is live in Moscow after that horrific terror attack near Russia's capital city. The death toll now at 139. Next, the cloud of confusion Vladimir Putin is stirring as he tries to deflect blame. Stay with us.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Welcome back. And topping our world lead, Russian leader Vladimir Putin trying to have it both ways. This afternoon, he conceded the horrific terror attack on a concert hall near Moscow that killed 139 people was carried out by, quote, radical Islamists. But Putin again suggested Ukraine was somehow involved, even though Ukraine and the United States deny Ukraine had anything to do with it. And the terrorist group ISIS-K has claimed responsibility. On Sunday, suspects linked to the attack were in Russian court. Four men from Tajikistan charged with terrorism and visibly injured, fueling speculation that they may have been tortured after their arrest. CNN's Matthew Chance is reporting live from Russia. Matthew, is Putin providing evidence at this point to support his claim that Ukraine was involved?
Not a great deal of evidence, certainly nothing very substantial. What he's saying is that basically these individuals were detained after they'd carried out the attack on the way to the Ukrainian border. They're actually detained in a location about, 100 miles or so away from the Ukrainian border. And what Putin originally said is that a window had been prepared. This is the words he used, for them to move through into Ukraine, implicating the Ukrainian authorities in organizing the attack, something that Kiev has categorically denied. Of course, Washington's denied it as well. The problem is with that theory is that this is a highly militarized border. There's a war going on between Russia and Ukraine, particularly in that area around that border area. And so even if the Ukrainians had opened up a window on their side, it's hard to explain how these terrorists would have managed to get through the Russian lines before they even got to Ukraine. And so that's a sort of fatal flaw in Putin's rationale at the moment. But nevertheless, he is sticking to it. He's doubling down. He's implying that Ukraine may have been involved in some way.
Matthew, can we take a step back for a minute? Why would ISIS-K target Russia?
Well, I mean, it's not too difficult to imagine. that. And in fact, they've targeted Russia in several times in the past. I mean, back in 2022 in Afghanistan, there was a suicide bomb attack outside the Russian embassy, which killed two diplomatic staff, Russian diplomatic staff, and injured lots of other people as well. And that was carried out by ISIS-K. They're very operational inside Afghanistan and Central Asia. Russia, remember, has been backing the regime of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, which is literally fighting ISIS inside Syria. And Russia's been instrumental in destroying ISIS infrastructure sort of in that country and elsewhere as well. You also have to remember that, you know, the distinction, the rivalry that we report on all the time between Russia and the West is not something that is necessarily acknowledged by, you know, Islamic fundamentalist groups like ISIS. They see the United States, Europe, Britain, and Russia as being on the same side as the equation, you know, against them, in other words.
Yeah, it's such important context. It's why U.S. officials certainly were not surprised by the attribution to some degree. Matthew, you went to the scene of this terror attack. I wonder, how are Russians memorializing the victims here?
Yeah, well, we can't get into the actual building yet because it's still a crime scene. It's also very dangerous because a fire has left it in ruins. But there's a big memorial that sprung up outside with thousands of Russians, you know, many with tears in their eyes, going there to lay flowers, put cuddly toys because of all the children that were caught up in this, and photographs and candles and things like that. I mean, I have to say that floral memorials like this have become something of a commonplace feature in Russian life. They're punctuating the year. I mean, last month it was flowers for the death of Alexei Navalny, the prominent opposition leader here. Last year, you'll remember, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the Wagner leader, who died in a suspicious air crash after leading an uprising against Moscow. There were flowers for him as well. And so it all points to the volatility and the insecurity in Russia today.
Yeah, such an important point and valuable reporting. Matthew Chance in Russia for us. Thank you. Well, after a gaping hole in one of its planes, questions about quality, the major announcements today from Boeing that acknowledge the world's largest airplane manufacturer is very well aware it has a big PR problem. Stay with us. International lead, right now, thousands of Americans are planning their summer travel, which for many will include flying. And if you're booking a trip, it is hard to ignore the recent serious incidents involving Boeing planes happening both in midair and on tarmacs. Well, now, Boeing CEO says he's leaving at the end of the year, and so are other top officials. I want to bring in CNN aviation correspondent Pete Montine. Boeing CEO leaving at a time when the company really needs leadership. There's no question about that. I want to get to that in a minute, but I want to start with, look, man, I'm traveling with my family on an airplane in like 48 hours. Are we safe? Are we okay?
You're not the only person who's been asking this to me. I think the big thing here is that if you're on a MAX 9, which is at the central of all of these issues lately, those are probably the safest they've ever been. Those have been gone over with a fine-tooth comb by the airlines after the door plug blowout on January 5th. The plane was grounded for 19 days. There is a bit of a different question here about these other sort of one-off incidents, and we've seen the most of those at United Airlines. There's been about a dozen of those incidents. The largest and most significant ones, the wheel falling off of a 777 leaving San Francisco, a plane skidding off the end of the runway in Houston, of engine fire of a flight leaving an airport and had to come back right away. Those are a bit more interesting, and those have caught a lot of scrutiny of the FAA, but it's really important to differentiate here. There's the MAX 9 issue, which really exposed a quality control problem and systemic issues at Boeing, which led to the now resignation of their CEO by the end of the year. And then there are these one-offs, which have been really put up in lights more lately because of that MAX 9 door plug blowout and how dramatic that was. It's really important to remember here that the last time someone was killed on a commercial airliner in the United States was back in 2018. That was sort of a freak incident. A fan blade flew off an engine, killed a passenger on board a plane. The last time there was a fatal commercial airplane crash in the U.S., 2009. That was the Colgan Air crash, led to really significant changes of regulations and requirements for pilot training. Aviation in the U.S. is incredibly safe, especially on a commercial airline.
I appreciate your patience in answering that question, mostly because I know literally everyone in your life is probably asking it to you just about 400 times a day, and I'm glad to join that distinguished group. I have to ask, I love covering business stories. I was fascinated today. To some degree, I thought it was inevitable that someone was going to have to take the hit over at Boeing. I did not know that it was going to be this wide scale and this high up.
Think about this. If this is a Taylor Swift era, this is the reputation tour. And Boeing really needs to do some reputational fixing here. And this is now starting at the top with CEO Dave Calhoun saying he will leave as CEO by the end of the year. Also, the board chair and the head of commercial airplanes out with immediate effect. So Calhoun is the guy who really has the softest landing here. What is really interesting is that he came into power after issues with the 737 MAXs back in 2018 and 2019, and now he's leaving because of these 737 MAX issues of the door plug blowout back on January 5th. The only person who really left before this was the head of the MAX program, and there were a lot of questions in aviation about whether or not that was sort of a scapegoat move. And so this is really significant now that he is leaving. It really, really shows that Boeing is trying to clean up its act and is aware of the fact that it reported a huge financial loss just last week, and there are airlines more and more rallying around the idea that they are losing confidence in Boeing. With new planes on order, they're maybe doubting that. And then also, they're worried about maybe getting money from Boeing in terms of damages when it came to the fact that United and Alaska Airlines, at least here in the U.S., had to cancel hundreds of flights each day during that grounding.
Yeah, it's a huge day on your beat. You've been crushing it,
no
as
shortage
always.
Of news.
And extra points for the Taylor Swift tie-in, which is
anytime.
Always great for ratings. Pete Martino, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Well, a protest move by the Prime Minister of Israel. Plus, something Trader Joe's has not done in more than 20 years. We've got leads around the world. That's next.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.